if you sit at the computer and start writing, now I know there are pantsers, I get that, but and eventually you're going to become a plotter because it's just the nature of the beast. You're going to have to structure at some point.
Welcome to Angle on Writing, a podcast about writing, publishing, and book marketing. Welcome, writers. Today, I have with me a true Renaissance woman, a Emmy-nominated, award-winning writer, poet, screenwriter, playwright, just about everything else you can think of. Welcome, Dale Griffiths Stamos.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So with that varied background, where did you start? How did you get into writing?
I think I was born writing. I've published my first poem when I was 9. So obviously I was writing young. I was reading young. So what eventually happened is that I didn't know what kind of writing I wanted to do, and I would try short stories and, you know, start a potential novel. It wouldn't go anywhere. And then I started acting. I did a lot of acting in high school, and became very enamored with plays and playwrights. To me, they were the gods, these playwrights. And I did some acting during college, a little bit afterwards, but I began to realize that I would much rather create the words on the page that the actors get to say than acting them. So I sort of moved accidentally. I was in a play and the director said, "I know you write," I was writing a lot of poetry then. I also was writing songs. Okay, so poetry and songs preceded playwriting. And I was quite serious about certainly the songwriting. And this director said, "Why don't we do, let's make a show." And so it was a show that was going to feature some of my songs and some of my poetry, and she would write some pieces and we'd have some little short scenes and we'd put on a show. Well, the bottom line was I became enamored with the theater, and I'd already been enamored as an actor. Now it was as a writer. So I began taking writing classes in theater specifically. Meanwhile, I was doing a master's degree in romance linguistics and literature, a little distant from the writing, but this was always happening at the same time. There was the real world stuff that you know you have to do to try to get a job, and then the artistic stuff. So I did get a job teaching French and was continuing to write songs and poetry, and now had begun writing plays. When my son was born, I married around that time. When my son was born, I realized that really I needed to sort of choose between theater and songwriting, and I chose theater. I still write songs occasionally, but theater became my all-encompassing form of writing. And somewhere in there, I started going to the Writers Conference and the Santa Barbara Writers Conference. And of course, as you know, eventually began teaching there, realizing how much I really enjoy working with writers as well as writing. So I had a number of plays that were being done in Los Angeles, and a lot of my short plays were being done across the country. And I had a couple of directors who said they wanted to move into film. Could I adapt my short plays into films? So I went, okay. I did never think I'd move into film. After the third short film, and they went to lots of festivals and some got awards, which was nice, and I realized that I also wanted to direct. So I began to direct. So the last three of my six short films I directed. Somewhere around there, I also took a little side trip when you talked about Renaissance women. My brother had hired a writer to write a book about modern day Renaissance men. And he basically said, okay, we got to write about the women because people keep saying, what about modern Renaissance women? And I said, I'm busy doing short films. And he said, no, you have to do this. We'll work on it together. So before I knew it, I was taking a 2-year side route and wrote a book called Ren Women: What Modern Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives. And that was a whole experience in itself. I took 2 years to write it, 1 year to market it, where I was, even being sometimes being flown places to talk about the book, interviewed some absolutely extraordinary women, and so that was great. But at one point I realized, all right, I can keep doing this. I can even join a speaker because I like doing public speaking. I can join an organization and I can really get into the speaking circuit. And then a little niggling voice in my head said, no, you're done with this for now. You're done speaking, you're done marketing, you're going back to film. And that's exactly what I did. I finished the last couple of short films, went to lots of festivals, and then decided to put my big girl pants on and write and direct a feature film, which is where you find me now.
So, but before we go any further with that, I want to back up just a little bit. And can you say, so you started with acting. Do you think what you learned in acting has helped you in your writing?
I do think there's a relationship, especially if you're going to be doing dramatic writing. Dramatic writing is a distinct form of writing, and it's one of the reasons I started teaching, because I realized there's structural things that you learn in dramatic writing that you don't necessarily learn when you're writing other types of prose. So what acting teaches you is about intention, about the character's wants, about scene structure. Because if you're going to analyze, you have to, if you're a good actor, you analyze a scene. You look at what makes it work. And so, yes, I think all of that played into that. And I also think being a poet and songwriter did as well. Because poetry, and I write very musically. I'm an audio type of person. Everything is sound to me. So dialogue becomes a musical process. And to me, that came from my musical background and from poetry. So I think every form of writing actually helps every other form of writing, it enriches it.
So you were able to make that when you wrote your nonfiction book, the Ren Women, you were able to transition to that type of writing fairly easily.
It was not all that easy. It was a struggle because first of all, I don't write nonfiction. And second of all, I had all these interviews on my hands, with all the material from that. And I was thinking, what is going to be, it was back to structure. What is going to be the structure of this book? Because if I don't know what the structure is, then I don't know how to write it. And when I came up with the subtitle, because I had a few subtitles, but when I came up with the subtitle, What Modern Day Renaissance Women Have to Teach Us About Living Rich, Fulfilling Lives, I kind of found my structure, because now each chapter is basically, we're talking about the women's lives, but on the side, I would put all these quotes from the women out of the chapter, and I even put something at the end of each chapter called Ren Gems. So these were all sort of inspirational aspects of their lives. So that guided the structure. But the other thing that guided it was I thought, I'm a storyteller. This is what I do. So I would start each chapter with sort of a dramatic moment in the character's life. I mean, the character, you see, I think in characters, in the woman's life, and draw the reader in with this sort of dramatic, like, Eva Haller's chapter was about how she escaped the Holocaust and, how she convinced a Hungarian soldier not to kill her because, as she said, she was much too young and beautiful to die. I mean, that was such a great little nugget of a story. So I went back to what I knew how to do best, which was to tell stories. And so then I found my way, and a lot of people have really enjoyed enjoyed the book.
Yes, I know I have. And I also enjoyed your film. I went to the world premiere here in Santa Barbara, in the rain.
It was raining at our premiere. We didn't get a full house because of that. I'm sure we would have
Yeah.
otherwise, but still, we had a nice audience. Yeah.
Yes, and I really enjoyed it. And I had seen I thought it was better than I expected because I had seen like a year before I had seen like a little preview, which
Right.
you can never really tell when there's a year before a preview. But so as a film be as a script becomes a film, it transforms itself. And so as the director, how did that feel?
That's such an interesting observation, and it actually went through two other transformations because it had started as a play. In fact, every film I've ever done has started as a play. And this had been a play from 20 years ago that I reimagined for now, and even the same two actors had played in it 20 years ago. So they were much younger. And the actor said to me, Dale, why can't you age up our characters and we can still be in it and we can, revisit this? So there was already an adaptation from the original play. I then wrote a modern version of the play called Imbalance, which brought everything up to date, brought all of the themes, that are much more relevant today into focus. And then there is the process of turning a play into a film script, which is a whole other thing. So the first thing you want to do is wherever. Now, I write dialogue heavy scripts. It's just what I do. It doesn't mean that it's not filmic. It's just that some films have more dialogue than others. But what the trick is it cannot then feel to an audience like it's a play, like they're what just watching a play. You have to make it filmic. So I did a lot of, we all know that writing is rewriting. And I did a lot of rewriting the feature script so that I kept making it more filmic, putting more imagery in, having more action, having more locations, opening it up. And even went through and did a lot of work with the actors, where they would read their own scene. We'd have a little conference with each other, and they would say, well, this, I'm wondering if I can say this line this way because it feels more comfortable. And I would listen and go, yeah, absolutely. I will take the best ideas. I'll call them my own, if it works. So I did a lot of molding of the script then. But and then directing, you direct the script that is on the page. But what you're doing is you're doing something called coverage. And I think things about film, Lisa, that coverage means if you're going to do a scene, you're going to do it multiple times. You will do it, let's say, a long shot, or sometimes called an establishing shot. You then do close-ups on one person, on another person. And then do something called over the shoulder, where you're looking at this person from the point of view of over that person's shoulder. You might do extreme close-ups, although I didn't do too many of those. And you're doing that same scene over and over again. Now, if you have good actors, and I had superb actors, they will give you something different each time. So they give you material to work with. So now you have all this footage of, scene three, take, you might have three takes with the close up and three more takes with the medium. And, so you have all this material. So the revelation for me, and I learned a little of this during short filmmaking, is post-production. Because they call the editor the third writer. So your director is just choosing the look, the feel, the performances. If you have a good DP, you don't really have to worry about the lenses. I had a good DP. I didn't worry about that. I just knew they were going to give me the look I wanted, and I would just say, I need this look. Then you're in post-production, and you've got all this raw material. That's where a film honestly is truly made. And it's like writing all over again. It's fabulous. I have an editor with whom I have worked on several shorts, and he and I are like each other's other half. I mean, he gives me his take on a scene. I go through it and make notes. We then try other changes to it. We then maybe try a couple of other versions. And we do this for every single scene. And then we do the same thing for the entire film. So it took a year. The post-production took a year. And of course, on top of that, you hire a composer. And because of my music background, I was able to really know the music sound I wanted. We had actually hired a young man, very talented young man out of USC. I ended up having to let him go. He was so sweet about it because I felt terrible, but very talented. But I knew that he wasn't delivering the sound I wanted. I knew the sound I wanted, and my editor said, "I know David Arkenstone." I said, "David Arkenstone, the New Age artist?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "I think he might be interested in, he's done all these albums, he might be interested in scoring a feature." And God bless him, he came on board, even, met my budget, because this was an ultra low budget film, so that's a whole other story, because I was the producer too, and that wasn't necessarily always fun. But he came on board and gave me absolutely the music I wanted. And so you bring that into post-production. So it's this whole palette of tools. I think that's why I never knew how much I'd like filmmaking, but I think those are some of the reasons there's so many tools that you can lean on.
Yes, definitely. And you mentioned that you teach, and so what kind of things do you, well, you're giving a 5-day workshop at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, so, and you've done that for
Since
many years.
2004 or 5, I think. Yeah.
So, what kind of things do you find people come into your workshop wanting to learn?
Well, one of the things that I noticed about a lot of the workshops was that a lot of them concentrate on what's on the page. And they often concentrate maybe on the first 5 pages of someone's work. And when I would when I, when as a student I went, I would keep wanting to know, well, where does those 5 pages fit into the whole book? What does that 5 pages have to do with what's going to happen later? And most workshops don't concentrate on that because they're looking at the writing. Some of that may be talked about, but I realized I really wanted to focus on the entire structure of the book. So I took three-act structure with all of its elements that I'd learned in dramatic writing, and I apply it in the class to the students' work, so that we sometimes don't even get to their pages, but we talk about their book. And the book can be at any stage, but once I've kind of gone over some of the basics of three-act structure, inciting incident, the normal world, the upside down world, the midpoint, the dark night of the soul. I mean, there's just some standard story elements that are in every good story. Even if they're mixed up, they can be in different locations. That's okay, but you have all of these elements. And so I lecture a little bit, and I'm sometimes a little surprised at how many prose writers, because dramatic writers know this stuff, but how many prose writers haven't necessarily been exposed to it. I think more and more now they are, because there's a lot more books being written about structure in novels and in memoirs. And I work with a lot of memoirists as well. So that's what they. And even sometimes another workshop would say, "Oh, okay, you're struggling with structure, go see Dale." They would know that this was the structure class. And again, other workshops will work on structure, but that's That's the main thing I work on. And then I put people in the warm seat, which is what I call the hot seat, because it's not a hot seat, it's a warm seat. And it's, basically, we have a Socratic conversation where I say, okay, if we're talking about an inciting incident, do you see one in your story? Do you have one that comes to mind? Well, yeah, it's possibly such and such. And what about who do you think your protagonist is? And how does the inciting incident create a problem for the protagonist? And I ask questions, and they, find their way through their story. They don't always have an answer, but that's kind of what we do in the workshop.
That sounds like something I need to do with what with my work in progress.
Well, a lot of people do find that, and I've taught also at the San Miguel de Allende conference several times, and there are a lot of people that was what I struggled with the most when I first started writing plays. I struggled with structure. And then I finally f discovered how incredibly freeing structure is. Structure doesn't inhibit you, it frees you. It gives you all these guideposts so that you're not flailing around, you're not in the dark. And so for me, it saved my writing, and I really do believe in how powerful it can be for every kind of writer.
Do you talk mainly about the three act structure, or do you go into some of the other, like the five act structure?
I work within three act structure, but the three act structure, of course, most people will agree that act two is divided into two parts. Because there's the part where the main character is reactive to what's happening to them. And somewhere in the at the midpoint, they realize that what they're trying to do is just not working, and they become active. And so you have this sort of turning point in every act too. And of course, I talk about the crisis and the climax and the resolution. And I also talk about, what do you do within a scene? How does a scene start and where does it end? And I talk a lot about conflict in the sense of what is dramatic conflict? Not just conflict. I once saw a short film where all it was were two people arguing about politics. And I went, okay. But no one changed. No one, nothing. You have to have a character transformation. So we talk a lot about that as well. All the elements that come into play.
Those are all very, very important. I mean, I know that my writing totally transformed when I learned to write a scene and what that really meant.
Right.
So, what are some of the other issues that you think that people just beginning to write, what are some of the issues that they struggle with?
I was just at a function, and someone said, what would be the two pieces of advice you would give to a writer starting out? And I told him about one thing I talk about in my workshop, which I call filling the notebook, which is basically when I first start structuring something and trying to ask myself questions about it, I fill I can't think, it's not a loose leaf notebook, I fill a notebook with pencil, in pencil, because I don't want it to feel like it's set in any kind of cement. It is very fluid, very exploratory, very right brain. See, this is structure I'm talking about, but it's very right brain. It's like, okay, if I know that I'm going to have a protagonist, who is that protagonist? And why am I choosing? I'm asking myself questions. Why am I choosing that person as my protagonist? And can they take the problem that I'm going to create? And what is that problem, by the way? Well, I think it's such and such. And how are they going to be different at the end? So I start to ask myself all these questions, and I also do character bios and all of that. And the reason I'm advising doing something of this nature is that if you sit at the computer and start writing, now I know there are pantsers, I get that, but and eventually you're going to become a plotter because it's just the nature of the beast. You're going to have to structure at some point. And some people like to do it later. I like to do it before. But if something feels very open-ended and you're not committed to it at all and exploratory, that's a great place to start writing because you're not committing to anything, and therefore you can explore to your heart's content. And underneath the, because the first stuff that comes out of your brain is almost always crap. You know, it's not the good stuff. You're trying to excavate down to the good stuff. And you have to trust that sometimes you have to write all kinds of things. You can cluster it, you can do all kinds of techniques, but basically you're trying to get down to the good stuff. So the first thing I tell people is have that kind of loose-ended, open-ended, exploratory process before you commit to what you're actually writing, because once you start committing to it, you've made sort of firm choices and you're a little bit stuck. And it's going to be harder to get unstuck, but earlier in the game, you can. And then the other piece of advice I give is to, I even said this to somebody at one of the film festivals I went to. This writer asked me for advice, and he said, "I just can't finish my book. I just can't finish on my book." And I said, "Well, what's happening?" He says, "Well, I write a page, and then my brain says, 'No, that's terrible. You gotta rewrite it.' And then I don't, then I rewrite it 10 times, and I don't get any further." And I said, "Well, the first thing you have to do is when you're writing a first draft, you have to take your editor bodily, if you have to, pick him up, put him outside the room, and then lock the door." And now, when you write, there's no editor in the room. Nothing that you write is bad. Nothing that you write is not okay. Everything that you write is just writing. And you're just gonna write. Later, when you've got a draft, bring the, invite him, have some cookies, bring him back in the room, or her, and sit them down and have a conversation, but not at the beginning. I used to do a workshop where I'd bring my first draft, my first scene of a play in over and over, and every time I got feedback, I'd rewrite it every single time. And the guy who led the group finally said, "Dale, what is your play about?" And I realized, oh, I don't know if I know. And that's when I realized, for me, I do many, many drafts before. I mean, I know that at workshops that's not always the case, but for personally, I do a lot of drafts. Before I ever show it to anyone, because I want to go through that process myself, and I bring in the editor, later down the line. So that's what I tend to advise.
Well, those are, I mean, you've given me so much advice that I really need myself. So I'm sure that the listeners and viewers will definitely get a lot out of that. So what is next? You have this feature film that's going to festivals. What's next?
Well, that will be going for about a year. So we're going to be doing festivals for a year, and after which we will try to get the much wanted distribution, which of course, now that distribution can involve having a small theatrical run and then getting on to one of the many platforms, or it can be going straight to the platforms. You go straight to Hulu or Netflix or whatever, or even some of the smaller ones that are becoming much bigger, like Tubi and so forth. I have 2 feature-length scripts that are ready to be produced, but I don't want to do the producing myself. That was the hardest part for me. Basically, I will be seeing if there are, especially as I go to film festivals, if there are people, somebody has already asked to see one of the scripts, and if people want to see the script and if they're potentially interested in producing. In the meantime, I have a finished play. I have not stopped writing plays. And I have a finished play that I really is really important to me, and that I might produce myself. Because I have very strong ideas about what it needs to look and sound like. So those are kind of what I have in my mind.
Well, I hope that those all that you find producers and that your play gets done, and I look forward to seeing those. But I'm sure I will see you in June before that.
Yep.
or maybe just around town.
Yeah.
Who knows? I know I've run into Trader Joe's, so.
Yes. Well, we've run into each other in multiple places. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll continue to.
Well, thank you so much.
You're
I
very
really
welcome.
appreciate it.
I enjoyed. Thank you, Lisa.